Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is an Aftershock Monday episode. It's also part of our 12 days of the Comic Source. And I'm going to do something a little bit differently on these Aftershock Mondays for the 12 days of the Comic Source. What I'm actually going to do is I'm going to cover a series of number ones. I'm going to do a different number one series from Aftershock. Books that I haven't talked about on the Aftershock Mondays before. There are a few issues that I may have talked spoiler-free on our new Comics Monday, but haven't done a deep dive into these number one issues. And the reason I'm doing this is because I know there are listeners out there who haven't had a chance to check out any Aftershock series, and they are an up-and-coming publisher. They've been around for a few years now, and they've shown that they have a real eye for talent, and they have a real eye for story. A lot of these number ones I'm talking about are intriguing. They hook you right away. And just as an example of saying, I just said they have a real eye for talent. Stephanie Phillips is somebody whose first comic work that I became aware of was over at Aftershock with Descendants. She followed that up with Artemis and the Assassin rather, then did work at Top Cow. And now she's over at DC. She's got a digital first Sensational Wonder Woman coming out next year, and she's the new writer for Harley. So clearly a big step up for Stephanie, and just goes to show that, you know, the next big thing at Marvel or DC or what have you, they may be coming through Aftershock. You know, Donny Cates did work for them when they first launched. So Garth Ennis has done multiple series there, Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor, Tim Seeley. So they really do know what they're talking about when it comes to talent. So again, I'm going to go through and do a bunch of number ones, starting with Red Atlantis. And this book is actually written by the aforementioned Stephanie Phillips, but it's from a story by Janosch Newman and Victoria Newman, along with Nicholas Leeds. And I'll talk about it sort of at the end. They have a background in real life espionage. So this is sort of a throwback to the Cold War, you know, USSR versus the United States. This is more Russia versus the United States. And it's an intriguing start. The second issue has already come out. I've read it. It was great. So Red Atlantis number one, entitled Coincidences. As I said, written by Stephanie Phillips. We have Robert Carey on art. Roche handles the colors and Troy Pateri is doing the letters. So as we open up here, we see that it's Houston, Texas, November 3rd, 11:05 a.m. So anybody who's familiar with certainly the most recent election here in the United States, presidential election, it was held on November 3rd. So they're not held on the same date every year or every 4 years as it is. You know, we vote for president every 4 years here in the United States, but it's always on the first Tuesday after November starts. The first Tuesday after November 1st. So if November 1st falls on a Tuesday, it's not then. But otherwise, it's on the first Tuesday of November. And this past year, 2020, we had a presidential election and it was held on November 3rd. So clearly the implication here is this just happened, right? The events in this comic just happened, even though this comic actually came out before November. But anyway, it's November 3rd. We're in Houston, Texas. We're at the polling place and a woman is talking on her phone. She's clearly talking to somebody at her job, saying if he wants to move the meeting to Thursday, it's going to need to reschedule. And she's got her kid in tow, saying, you know, sorry, I have my son with me. He's homesick today. And she's trying to calm her kid down because he keeps saying, mom, mom. She's like, mommy's on the phone. You know what? I'm going to have to call you back. I just got to the library. I'm going to vote. And then we see a man wearing a hood who has walked in behind her, kind of got stubble on the chin. And all of a sudden at 11:10 a.m., his eyes go blank. His eyes go white. You don't see anything at all. You know, no irises or you know, pupils or anything like that. And then everybody's cell phone starts to go off, including the woman who was just on the phone, and she's looking at her phone going, hey, what's wrong with it? And then we see her expression change and her eyes go blank. No pupil, no irises. And that happens to everybody, all the adults anyway. The kid who was, you know, asking for his mom attention while she was talking, it's like, mom, mom. But she's blanked out. And all of a sudden that mom attacks somebody else. We see the kid go running off to, I guess, to hide. And behind him in the library, we see all these acts of violence. And then the scene shifts to Tampa Bay, Florida, November 3rd, 11:14 a.m., which is the same time that we see in the first panel of Houston, Texas. Down at the bottom looks like a schoolroom, Columbus, Ohio, November 3rd, 11:14 a.m. Denver, Colorado, at another polling place, November 3rd, 11:14 a.m., all Eastern time. And there's just these incredible scenes of violence, people attacking one another. One woman is swinging a fire extinguisher at somebody else and, you know, braining them on the head. Somebody else has grabbed a fire axe and they're chopping at people. So pretty brutal violence here. All apparently set off by whatever happened to this guy at 11:10 a.m. He was the first one that happened to. His eyes went blank. And all of a sudden, you know, the crap kind of hit the fan. So by 11:20, he's exiting the building. We see that his eyes are kind of back to normal as he leaves the building. And outside, even at 11:20, there are still a few people that are look like they're acting violently. So then we have a flashback. It's we're still in Houston, Texas. It's still November 3rd, but it's 10 minutes ago, 10 minutes before, you know, all that happened. So just maybe moments before we first saw the guy in the hood, saw his eyes turn blank. And we're at an apartment complex. Some girl is watching Fight Club. She's talking about how much she loves Ed Norton. And then her roommate says, don't you have to go to class? And she says, I'm not going. I'm skipping it today. We can't all be superstar journalists in the making. And her response is, I'm not a superstar. So the girl watching the movie sitting on the couch, her name's Emily. The other who is chastising her for not going to class, her name is Miriam. And when Miriam says that, I'm not some kind of superstar, Emily says, I'm sorry, did you think I was talking about you? I meant that kid Jake in my communications class. He's destined for greatness. But clearly she's given Miriam a hard time. And Miriam says, you know, whatever, I'm going to class. Enjoy your personal time with Ed Norton. And as she's saying that, there's a click and the lights go out. And Miriam says, what's wrong with the lights? Emily's response is, don't look at me, I paid the bill. And then at 11:14, all of a sudden, we see Miriam grunt and her eyes go blank. She doesn't turn violent, though. She actually snap out of it pretty quickly. Obviously, Emily is concerned because all of a sudden, Miriam is just out of it. And she even drops her coffee cup. And Emily says, hey, can you hear me? Can you hear me? What's going on? Talk to me. And then the power comes back on, but it's a power surge. And even some of the light fixtures explode. And then Miriam's saying, I can't breathe. Emily's about to call 911. And she picks up her phone. She's like, wait, what happened to my phone? I just charged it. How is it dead? And Miriam says, it's okay. Open a window. I'm okay now. I just need some air. So Emily opens the window and she's like, man, you scared the crap out of me. And she's looking down the street and she's like, it looks like a bigger power outage. Lights are out everywhere. There must have been some kind of accident because she sees a couple of cop cars driving down the street. And those cop cars are actually going to the polling place in Houston, Texas, because apparently it's just right down the street from the apartment of these two girls. Meanwhile, we see on the next page, some time has passed. It's now 1 p.m. in the afternoon. There are a couple of FBI agents that are examining the aftermath. And we see a lot of dead bodies at the polling place here in Texas. And the female agent is saying there were similar attacks at voting polls in major swing states. And they all happened about the same time. And her male agent partner says, yeah, clearly planned and coordinated. Witnesses don't really, you know, report seeing any one particular person doing it, just cell phones going off. And then all of a sudden violent urges. If you've seen the Kingsman, the first one, I can't remember what it's called, Secret Service or whatever, similar idea, right? Like that was the whole idea. Samuel Jackson was broadcasting something through cell phones that basically drove people crazy and made them kill everybody. So it did remind me of that when I was reading this. But anyway, the female agent goes on to say, it was like in Richmond. And I'm assuming she's referring to Richmond, Virginia here. She says, yeah, there was a Russian and a bowling alley. You think the events are connected? And the male agent says, well, there was a high school teacher, principal, no record. and all of a sudden he murders a mother in cold blood on election day. Yeah, something's going on. And we see the local sheriff show up. He's apologizing. He says, sorry, there was a car accident. I'm Detective Bob Davis of the Houston PD. And one of the agents, the male agent, introduces himself as Agent Greg Cade. And the other agent is the female agent is Special Agent Christine Cook. And so the introductions are made around, and he says, the detective from Houston PD says, I'm glad you're all here, 'cause I've been in law enforcement my whole life and I've never seen anything like this. And Christine Cook asks, well, did your department receive any kind of message? Like in the few weeks it seemed unusual, might've hinted at some of this. And Davis says, a message? Man, you don't think anybody could have known this was going to happen, do you? And Agent Cade says, well, we can't rule anything out. But, Bob Davis is pushing him for some answers. He's like, well, how could random violence be premeditated? And Christine says, well, when random violence happens in multiple places at the same time, doesn't it have to be, premeditated? If it's planned out. And Davis says, there was one other thing that was kind of weird. At the time of the attacks, there was almost a citywide power outage. And I'm not saying there's any connection, but we were able to trace the origin of the power outage to an apartment building just a few blocks from here. They had a transformer blow there. And so the agents exchange a glance and they say, you wouldn't happen to have that address, do you? And Davis is like, well, you think it's related? And Agent Cade says, well, like I said before, we don't want to rule anything out. So Davis says, I can do you better than just the address. I can get you a list of the residents. Hold on. And so as he goes off to get that information, Agents Cade and Cook are talking, saying a power outage. Yeah. And then four cities with seemingly random acts of violence at four voting places, unusual cell phone activity, like all happening simultaneously. What the hell is going on? It's, these are the kind of coincidences. You got to think it's part of some larger attack, right? So Davis comes back. He's got the names and backgrounds of the current residents. And they look through it. They see that nobody has really any record to speak of, maybe a few charges for possession, unpaid parking tickets. And as Cade's looking through it, he says, wait, a Russian citizen? What'd you say about the attack in Virginia? She says, well, the only person unharmed in the attack was a Russian named Alexei, but, they questioned him and let him go. They didn't have any reason to hold him. So Cade thinks that's a pretty big coincidence. Yeah, now we have a Russian citizen living at the center of this power outage. So they decide to go to the apartment and investigate, ask some questions. Meanwhile, at that apartment, Miriam is looking in the mirror, kind of checking her eyes. She seems like she's okay. And Emily's trying to convince her to go to the doctor. And Miriam says, no, I already missed one class today. I don't want to miss another. And Emily's saying, you're not going to class. You just reenacted The Conjuring on our kitchen floor. You need to go to the doctor, or maybe you need a priest. And Miriam's insisting she's fine. And Emily, she's not letting it go. She's worried, but what if you're not? What if something's wrong? And Miriam says, you know what? How about this? I'll stop by the clinic on campus after the lecture. So she opens the door, she's about to leave, and she runs like right into the agents. So they ask if either of them are Miriam Roberts. Miriam obviously says, yes, I am. They're saying, hey, I'm Special Agent Cook. This is Agent Cade. We're with the FBI. We'd like to ask you a few questions if you have a minute. And Miriam is like taken aback by this, like, what, why? And Emily's sort of whispering here, like, what did you do? And she says, nothing. I have no idea what this is about. And Agent Cook says, just a couple questions. Maybe we can even accompany you. Looks like you're on your way out, and then we'll be out of your hair. So they walk along with her and they ask, what happened? And Miriam's like, I don't know what else that I can tell you. I was getting ready for class and the lights went out. She doesn't mention anything about her seizure or the unusual behavior. And I don't blame her. I wouldn't be forthcoming about that either. Not even understanding herself what happened. And Agent Cade says, well, you didn't see or hear anything unusual, right? And she's like, well, like what? Well, anything that stood out at the time. Miriam says, other than the lights going out, no. And then Cook brings up the fact that she was born in Russia. And Miriam wants to know, well, why does that matter? And Cade, trying to throw her off the scent, because obviously Miriam doesn't know anything about any kind of event in Richmond or what have you. Cade says, well, it's just basic background information. And Miriam kind of shrugs. She says, well, yeah, I was born in Russia, but I've been in America since I was a baby. And again, they're pressing her, you know, they want to know about this Russian connection, and, you know, they're suspicious by nature. Well, then you're in foster care your whole life? And Miriam says, yes. Well, what about your parents? Well, I never knew them. I thought this was about a power outage. Why do you care about this other stuff? I said, I don't know anything else. I don't even know why the power went out. Why do you guys even care? Why is the FBI investigating a power outage? And Kate says, well, earlier today, there was an attack at a voting poll just down the road from your complex, and the power in a very large period portion of the city went out, and it all seemed to start with a transformer in your building. And Kate says, yeah, we're not accusing you of anything. We're following all possible leads. We're trying to get as much information as possible. And in the background of this, while they've been having this conversation out near campus, kind of like a park-like area, a quad with grass and trees, there's been a guy kind of in the shadows in the background, smoking a cigarette, drinking his coffee. And as Miriam says, well, it seems like a coincidence. I don't really know anything more about the power going out. It just, you know, went out. And all of a sudden we see this guy who's been sort of eavesdropping in the background come charging them. He throws his hot coffee in the face of Agent Cook, and then he takes out Agent Cade with a chop to the throat with his hand. And Miriam's, you know, just kind of standing there with a look of shock. And as Cook starts to recover, saying, ah, my eyes, this guy runs over, punches her, grabs her gun, kicks her in the knee. Then he goes over to Agent Cade, who's unconscious, and he disarms him, looks at his phone, looks at his ID, sees it says FBI. And Miriam's like, don't hurt me. And the guy wants to know if she's Miriam Pascal. Well, wasn't her name Miriam Roberts? That was what we just heard before, right? And Miriam's not even responding. She's, you know, taken aback by the violence that she's just seen. And the guy says, you are Miriam Pascal. God, it's been years. You're so big now. And he kind of reaches out to pat her, and she pulls away. No, please. He says, no, don't worry. I'm not here to hurt you, child. Miriam Pascal, I can't believe it. I never thought I'd see you again. And Miriam finally is recovered enough to respond. She says, you got the wrong person. I'm not Miriam Pascal. Meanwhile, somebody else from across the quad has seen this happen, and they come running, yelling at this man, hey, drop the gun. And he tells Miriam, hey, we got to go now. Sorry, little one, but it's up to us to stop World War III. And we see the time is now 2:59 p.m. and the story is to be continued. So a very, very fast-paced first issue. The art by Carey is done really, really well by Robert Carey. The facial expressions, especially the blank look everybody's getting, the look of shock on Miriam's face at various times, the look of that she has on her face when she kind of blanks out and she's kind of grunting, clearly in some sort of discomfort. Even to go as far as the inquisitive looks on the faces of the FBI agents when they're like, man, what is going on? It's all done extremely well. The fight scene, also very fast paced, and handled really, really well. Authentic looking fighting, and we get to see, you know, all the different kind of moves and, you know, disarm techniques and all that sort of stuff. So this is a great start. This is a wonderful example of doing a first issue correctly. It raises a lot of questions. Who's this guy that came and attacked the FBI agents? What's her connection to Miriam? Who is Miriam herself? Why is she being called Miriam Pascal? What's the link to the Russians? What happened in Richmond? Who's this Alexei Russian in Richmond that had something going on? What about the power outage? What about the violence? Like, so many things just up in the air, but all rendered expertly by Robert Carey, and the dialogue, the scripting by Stephanie Phillips. There's no hokey dialogue here. There's no slang to kind of date it. It's instantly classic. And, you know, Miriam, she reacts very realistically to the FBI agents and to being questioned. You know, she's a little defensive, she's a little annoyed, she's a little scared, and that all comes across in the dialogue that Stephanie Phillips is giving us. So again, just a really fun start, great start to this espionage story. You know, we're not even sure at this point what exactly it is. Seems to be something Russia, United States, We know that these days there's sort of almost what I would call a new Cold War, if you will. You know, it's no longer against the Soviets or Soviet Union or the USSR, but rather just Russia itself. So in the back of the book, we do get an interview with one of the story creators that I mentioned before. So I mentioned that Janos Newman, along with his wife, are the one that came up with this idea for this story that's being written by Stephanie Phillips. And we get an interview with him in the back of the book and learn that he's telling the story from a perspective of somebody that's lived through real life espionage. His family had a long history of working in the USSR, in the country's intelligence and counterintelligence agencies. After the collapse of the USSR, he joined the Russian intelligence service. He started at the SFB Academy. It was known as KGB High during the Soviet times. He worked there for a long time. He transitioned to the private sector, working with a lot of economic policy and things like that. And he says that he was running a state affiliated global multi-billion dollar money laundering operation for a private bank. And when that became dangerous, he feared for his life and the life of his wife, Victoria. And that's when they fled Russia and defected to the U.S. And when he came here, he worked with the U.S. intelligence agencies investigating international money laundering in the U.S. and across Europe. So he was looking for ways to manage his stress. He took some acting classes. He started writing stories. And he eventually teamed up with LA-based writers Dave Pavone and Nick Leeds. And Nick Leeds, we know, is one of the co-writers of this story as well. And they formed a company. And that's where they started working on this crazy idea that became Red Atlantis. So it's funny. He says, so a pretty simple and boring bio. He also talks about the inspiration for Red Atlantis, where, and a lot of it comes from the history of Russian and Soviet spy agencies. When he was at the FSB Academy, he got to read a lot of material that is classified. It's not available outside of those places, you know, classified textbooks, library materials and such. And a lot of what he read became the basis for Red Atlantis. And a lot of the characters are based on are real people that he met, real events. And he talks about the fight scene as well, about how it's so authentically done. And he loves the fact that the writer Stephanie Phillips has a background in martial arts, which helps to make the fight scenes and some of the action to be very authentic. And and he finishes up the interview by telling us what he wants people to understand about spies in action films. And he says, in real life, it's a boring chess game with unbelievable pressure all the time. If someone acted in life like a real Jason Bourne or a real James Bond, they'd be dead in less than 48 hours. So pretty interesting that this story comes from a real life spy, and he's drawing inspiration from real life stories from the espionage community and the Soviet community specifically. So again, I think this is done really, really well. The color work gives it sort of a washed out, sort of cynical feel. You definitely get that spy movie feel, and storytelling, the scripting, the pacing from Stephanie Phillips. It's all done really, really well. If anything, I wish we would have had a couple more pages here. I understand ending it where you do, but there's still so much that we don't know. I worry about being able to pack it all in and only four or five more issues. So I do kind of wish we had a little more idea of what happened. Doesn't mean that the characters themselves need to know, but a little more insight would have been great. But again, it's a nitpick. I don't think anybody who's reading this is saying, you know, I'm not picking up issue two because I don't know, you know, enough of the central mystery yet. I think Stephanie's gonna slow play that, and I'm perfectly fine with that. It's just my nature to want to, you know, have that knowledge. But if the journey is worth it, then I'm gonna enjoy the journey and try to be patient. So I think it's a great start. I definitely recommend Red Atlantis. I recommend you go to aftershock.com and check out a lot of their other titles. Like I said, I'll be doing reviews of other number ones throughout the day for this Aftershock Monday, 12 Days of the Comic Source. As always, I want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy Holiday, whatever you celebrate. Happy Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, what have you. Hope everybody's being responsible and safe. And if you're not able to spend time with your family, do it virtually. Do it over Zoom. Do it over Google Hangouts. If you are able to see your family, then hey, more power to you. I hope you're all safe and come out of it okay on the other side. So hope you all enjoyed this one, everybody. It's always great to talk to you, and we'll talk to you next time. You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.